Hi everyone, it's my fortune to be here to give this talk. So my title is Enhancing the Broadband Sensitivity of Gravitational Wave Detectors by Engineering the Entanglement Pairs. So this is maybe the first work which try to connect the physics of design the gravitational wave detector with the quantum information somehow, like quantum optics, quantum information, quantum entanglement, yeah. So this work is done collaboratively with Haixin Miao in University of Birmingham, which also previous postdoc in Caltech, and the Caltech student, Belinda Pang, and Chen Nongzhao in University of Western Australia, and my supervisor, Yan Bei Chen in Caltech. So first, gravitational wave detection. This, I think everyone is very familiar with this. So by detecting the gravitational wave, we can understand some unique information about the sources. And also, this is observing the gravitational wave is also a good way to do the further test of general relativity, especially in the strong curvature regime. And here is the kilometer scale detectors around the world. We have LIGO in Hanford and Livingston, which is currently working. And Kagura in Japan is still under building. Kagura is special because it's in low temperature. The mirror is put it in a cryo state. It's a low temperature gravitational wave detector aiming to decrease the thermal noise. And also we have a Virgo in Pisa. These two detectors are still not operating. The operating one is the LIGO in America. So the fundamental principles of detecting the gravitational wave using laser interferometry, the interferometer is the following. So when the gravitational wave passes through the interferometer, it will change the arm length of the interferometer. We have two arm lengths. One arm is orientated orthogonally with the other arm. And when the gravitational wave comes here, one arm will shrink its length, and the other one will lengthen its length. Therefore, you have when the light bouncing back to the dark pot through these two arms, if these two arms are, the length of these two arms are exactly the same, then the light will have perfect cancellation with each other at the dark pot. But if there is some mismatch, then you will have some signal which can be detected from the dark pot there. And this mismatch is created by the gravitational wave, and that's the basic principle. And let's look at some numbers. So the arm length of the typical gravitational wave detector is 4 kilometers, and the mirror mass is about 40 kilogram, and the target frequency is audio band, 100 hertz to kilohertz. And the typical magnitude of the strain we detect using this detector is 10 to minus 22, and the strain here is can be understood as the, it's actually a part of the metric, but it can be understood as the relative change of the length of the arm. And this typical magnitude of strain corresponding to the distance change of these two mirrors, which is 10 to minus 19 meters. And this number is so small that it can be even compared with the Broglie wavelength of the mirror here. And the current detector has a displacement sensitivity, which is exactly this. That's why we can detect the gravitational wave. And to further feel the quantumness of this device, we can compute the displacement of the mirror and the momentum of the mirror. So if you under the driven of gravitational wave, so if you multiply them, you'll find it's several h bar. Here I take a typical frequency, which is 100 hertz, but it's around the several h bar. So you can see that this device, although it's so big, but it's the physics of this device is actually governed by quantum mechanics. Right. So this is a typical sensitivity of the detector. Here, because this device is so sensitive toward the environmental sources, therefore we have several noise sources. So this red curve is a measured sensitivity, and this blue one this blue one. Oops. This blue one is a quantum noise. Quantum noise, and the quantum noise is coming from the vacuum fluctuating of the electromagnetic field. So this quantum noise, and also we have other noise sources like thermal noise, seismic noise, and Newtonian noise. And I want to say that these noises, these classical noise, thermal, seismic, Newtonian noise, all these noises are the force noise. Because it's a force noise, therefore it's always dominant at low frequency regime. Because it's a force acting, it's an oscillating force acting on the mirror. So we know that the mirror is a free test mass, is a free test mass. Therefore its response is higher when the frequency is lower. Right? So this force noise will dominate at low frequency regime. At high frequency regime, you can see that it's mostly dominated by quantum noise. And the quantum noise also have two, let me first jump to the next page. So the quantum noise can be classified as two different kinds. The first one is called short noise, which is due to the phase fluctuating of the optical field, which is dominated at the high frequency regime. The other one is called the radiation pressure noise, because when the optical power in the arm cavity is fluctuating due to the quantumness of the electromagnetic field, this will also impose a random force on the mirror. And this random force will also create the random displacement of the mirror, which will contaminate your gravitational wave signal. So this noise is called radiation pressure noise, and it's a force noise. That's why it's also dominant at the low frequency regime. So here there's a trade-off between the radiation pressure noise and also the shock noise here. I mean the quantum part. This trade-off is called standard quantum limit. So at this specific frequency, your short noise is equal to the radiation pressure noise. So our talk here will mainly concentrate on reducing this quantum noise, not this classical noise, but it's mainly focused on the quantum noise. But for the future improvement of sensitivity, such as Advanced LIGO Plus, and also like LIGO Voyager or Cosmic Explorer, this future proposed upgrade of the detector, basically we have to solve two problems. The first problem is to reduce the thermal noise. As you can see, the thermal noise or this noise, are classical noise, are very big at this intermediate and low frequency regime. So to reduce the thermal noise, we need to build a bigger mirror, because bigger mirror means bigger inertia, right? And also we need bigger laser beam size. Bigger laser beam size can average out the thermal noise. And also we need a better mirror coating, because the mirror coating will mainly determine its mechanical property. So if we have a better mirror coating, then we can have less mechanical loss. That means we have less thermal noise. But I'm not going to expand this part. We were basically discussing how to reduce this quantum noise, this guy, by using the technique called a squeezing technique. So in order to understand what does this squeezing technique means and how it improves sensitivity, we first look into the quantum noise limited sensitivity. And here, if we look at this sensitivity curve, this is frequency, and this is the normalized noise, the noise normalized by signal, or you can treat it as a noise to signal ratio. So let's first look at the signal part. We know that the gravitational wave detector, the interferometer, can be treated as a simple cavity. So if we have a simple optical cavity, that means we have resonance structure, right? From basic physics, we know that if we have a field, if we have an optical field whose frequency is exactly the same as the resonance frequency of this cavity, then this optical field can build up inside this cavity and get an enhanced amplitude, intra-cavity amplitude. But if this field, the frequency of this field is detuned from the resonance, then you don't have a good buildup inside the cavity. Therefore, the intra-cavity amplitude decreases. So we know that the gravitational wave drives the motion of the mirror, and the motion of the mirror will modulate the intra-cavity strong field and create sidebands. These sidebands are symmetrically distributed around the center frequency, around the carrier frequency of this cavity. So if the gravitational wave signal has very low frequency, that means the sideband that we created is actually very close to the resonance peak. Therefore, you have a larger amplitude, larger signal. But if the gravitational wave frequency is relatively high, so in this case, then the sideband field generated through the modulation of this pumping field will be deviated. This sideband will be deviated from the center resonance. Therefore, your amplitude will decrease. So what we need to remember here is the gravitational wave signal amplitude will decreases when the frequency increases. This sideband field amplitude will decrease when the frequency increases. And that can pop. Sorry.
It depends, right? Does it depend on the carrier frequency? So you could imagine the carrier frequency of your laser is very high frequency. Wouldn't it be increasing as the gravitational wave increases? Your signal would.
No. So the laser frequency here is locked to the cavity. So if your cavity is fixed, then your laser frequency your laser is on resonance with this cavity. So it's fixed. So when the laser frequency is fixed, then if you have a mirror change here, if you have a mirror displacement change here, this mirror displacement change will create a phase change of the light. And that creates the sideband. That sideband field is symmetrically distributed around the frequency of the main laser. That's the picture.
Sure.
Yeah.
But the waveform, the frequency of the waveform increases as it goes through, as the merger takes place.
Oh yeah, of course. That's the incoming gravitational wave.
Sure.
Here, the frequency we are discussing is if we do the Fourier transformation of that field, gravitational wave, we have lots of components,
yeah.
Right? We have lots of monochromatic components.
Yeah.
And here we're talking about one specific component.
Right.
So if this component has high frequency, then the corresponding signal generated inside the cavity will also have relatively large frequency detuning with respect to the center frequency.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the amplitude decreases. It's not the gravitational wave amplitude decreases. It's the gravitational wave. It's the optical field which generated. Yeah.
Right. But I mean, it depends on what is the natural frequency of my cavity. If I had adjusted the natural frequency of my cavity to be very high, it wouldn't decrease. It would increase as the gravitational wave frequency increases.
So the laser frequency is very high. It's 10 to 15 hertz, right? 10 to 15.
The one from the cavity.
Excuse me?
You said the frequency of the cavity.
The frequency of the cavity, yeah, the frequency of cavity can be many, because you have different free spectral range, right? I see what you mean. Yes, so for some specific for some gravitational wave, if the frequency is so high that the frequency is larger than one free spectral range, that's different. That's different. I agree. But within one free spectral range, so because the cavity has this resonance, and also somewhere here has another resonance, and it will repeat itself. Yeah. I agree. But within one free spectral range, this is true. The signal is signal amplitude decreases when frequency increases. Yeah. If the signal frequency just match the other. Free spectral range. Yeah, it will also get amplified. Yes. So that's a good point. Yeah. Sorry. So the decreasing of the amplitude with the increasing of frequency can partially explain why here the sensitivity curve goes up. The sensitivity curve goes up because sensitivity here is defined as the noise over signal. Here, the noise is dominated by the rate by the short noise, which is the phase fluctuating of the light. And this short noise is actually a white noise. Therefore, if it's a white noise, then in the spectrum it's flat. But here is the noise over signal. And signal decreases, therefore the sensitivity increases. Yeah. So this is short noise, and also we have radiation pressure noise, which coming from the fluctuating of the amplitude. This will be a force noise, which dominated here. And we need to mention that because the radiation pressure noise is actually the power fluctuating of the laser inside this cavity. So if your pumping laser is very strong, for example, currently it's 150 kilowatts intra-cavity, and if finally we have 800 kilowatts, then the radiation pressure will increase. The radiation pressure noise will increase. But the short noise will decrease because the phase and the amplitude of the light is a conjugate quantity. So they satisfy Heisenberg uncertainty principle. If you have larger short noise, then you have relatively smaller radiation pressure noise. But if you have larger radiation pressure noise, you have relatively lower short noise. So this curve, when your pumping power is changing, this curve is also changing. But this trade-off point between the radiation pressure noise and short noise, this trade-off point is moving along this line. This is a standard quantum limit, And we need to remember a very important quantity here, which is a transition frequency. This transition frequency means that at this frequency, the radiation pressure noise is equal to the short noise. So at this frequency is very important because it's related to the frequency-dependent squeezing we will mention later. Right. So in order to improve this sensitivity, what the community proposed is to use a squeeze light. The concept of the squeeze light related to redistributing the uncertainty. Because for a vacuum field, the amplitude uncertainty and the phase uncertainty are almost the same. And actually, this is one of the reasons why we have standard quantum limits. And to surpass this standard quantum limit, to improve the sensitivity, we have to redistribute it. So a relatively straightforward way to understand it is if we want to completely kill the quantum noise, what we need to do is if some god can make the H bar go to zero, then we can completely kill the quantum noise. But of course we cannot, right? Because the physics is determined by the quantum principle. Therefore, what we can do is we can only redistribute the uncertainty. So here, for a really vacuum field, your amplitude uncertainty and the phase uncertainty are the same. But if we inject this vacuum into a nonlinear crystal, pumped nonlinear crystal, which literally called the optical parametric amplifier, and what comes out is actually a squeeze state. The squeeze state means that, for example, in this case, we have a phase squeeze light, which means the phase uncertainty decreases. But because H bar is you cannot change H bar, therefore your amplitude uncertainty increases. So in this case, we inject into a nonlinear crystal, but we change the phase of the nonlinear crystal. So what comes out is another kind of squeezing. It's called amplitude squeezing. So your amplitude fluctuating decreases, but the phase fluctuating increases. So if we inject this squeeze field, instead of directly inject the vacuum field into the interferometer, dark part, and what comes out is if we inject a phase squeeze light, then the phase uncertainty decreases, therefore the high frequency sensitivity get improvement. Because the high frequency sensitivity is determined by the short noise, which is the phase fluctuating. But the price is the low frequency sensitivity becomes bad. So if we have a phase amplitude squeeze light injecting the system, and what comes out and what we finally detect is the low frequency regime, because the radiation pressure noise now is squeezed, therefore the low frequency regime sensitivity is increased, but the high frequency becomes worse. So if we inject a squeeze field, or how to say, the frequency independent squeezing field, we always inject like phase squeeze light, or we always inject amplitude squeeze light, we cannot get a broadband improvement of the sensitivity. So,
so in conjunction, when you have two detectors, you could inject amplitude, large, phase, accurate in one, and the opposite in the other detector. And now you have a combined detector,
So you mean if I have some strange guy here?
No, I do the top or the middle one.
Right.
The limestone and the bottom would have.
You mean we have a broadband that's increasing here? Is that what you mean?
I want to use the two detectors as if it were one.
Or two detectors?
Because you have two.
It's more expensive.
Why?
Well, you don't know your source, right?
Fine, good, wait, I mean, we didn't know the source. Now, well, I don't know what the future plans are, but you can imagine going first with the vanilla experiment. You get what you get. Now you learn more about your detector, you learn more what is it that you're going to call it a signal. And then eventually you say, well, without doing anything else, but just using the squeezing different in one and the other. Now I can gain low frequency one, I can get high frequency in the other one.
Yeah.
It seems like very.
Sure.
Simple-minded thing.
So, excuse me. So, you what you say is you inject both of them into the interferometer?
No. Only one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean.
You're going to tell us if you can do better. That's fine.
But actually, your question is very interesting. So, I want to make another version of that. So, yes, we have a phase squeeze light and we have an amplitude squeeze light. We have one and the other. And what I want to say is, if you use a beam splitter to combine this guy and this guy,
uh-huh.
And what comes out from the beam splitter is an entangled field. So if you have two independent sources, this guy and this guy are not entangled, quantumly not entangled with each other. But if you use a beam splitter, you can entangle them. Then if you entangle them, you can send one beam of the entanglement pair to Hanford and the other to Livingston. And then you can quantumly correlate these two detectors. That could be helpful. I have think about that, but what I find is this kind of scheme try to use the entanglement pair to connect the two detectors. The sensitivity is really depend on what kind of noise you are detecting. What kind of signal you're detecting. If your signal is just there's no phase delay. So if you then you can really make the joint detection better. But if your detector is on this plane, but your field, your incoming gravitational wave is like this. There's an angle. Therefore, your Hanford detector and the Livingston detector will receive different phase front. That is not good. So it's very limited. It's very limited. But it's a very interesting idea. Yes. So the point of this is we can improve the sensitivity only locally. We cannot have a broadband sensitivity if the injected squeeze light is frequency independent. So if we have a frequency dependent squeeze light, like at the low frequency it's the amplitude squeezing, but somehow at the high frequency it's a phase squeeze light, then we can increase the sensitivity in the broadband way. So how can we do that? The idea is the squeezers still generate a frequency independent squeeze light, like an amplitude squeeze light, and then we send it through a filter cavity. It's just an empty cavity, but the resonance frequency of this cavity is detuned from the carrier frequency of this squeeze light. So if you have such a detuning, then you can rotate your field. So what comes out from this filter cavity is such a frequency-dependent squeeze light. The squeeze light is rotating. So if you send this into the interferometer, you can broadbandly improve the quantum sensitivity. However, as I just mentioned, there is a very important quantity here, which is transition frequency. So we want, below this transition frequency, we want it almost amplitude squeezing. But after this transition frequency, we need the phase squeezing. Therefore, this rotator cavity, should rotate the field in such a way that it has a transition frequency, which is omega q, which is roughly several. How to say it? For as long as I go, it's 50 hertz. And if you study the details of this cavity, what quantity determines this transition frequency? The quantity determining this transition frequency is its bandwidth. So that means we need a cavity with bandwidth which is about 50 hertz for advanced LIGO. That's very difficult. That's a very narrow band cavity. 50 hertz, just imagine. Very, very difficult. So let's look at what kind of quantity determine the cavity bandwidth. So the cavity bandwidth can be viewed as related to the light storage time inside the cavity. So if you have some optical field, if this optical field is stored in this cavity for some time before it leaks out, and the inverse of this storage time is its bandwidth. So therefore, if you have a long cavity, then your optical field will circulate more times inside the cavity because it's propagated relatively long time, right? So it can increase the storage time, therefore decrease your bandwidth. Also, if your cavity has a high finance, that means your photon bounces more and more times inside this cavity before it leaks out or absorbed by the environment. Then your storage time also increases, then your bandwidth also decreases. Therefore, to decrease this bandwidth, to create a narrowband optical filter, we need either extremely long cavity, either a geometrically compact cavity, but with ultra high finance. And so this frequency dependent squeezing idea, I forget to mention, is initially proposed by Jeff Kimball and Kip Thorn. So in their paper, what they have is they proposed a kilometer scale filter cavity. That's very difficult. That's very expensive. It's not so difficult because it's not in principle difficult because you know, advanced LIGO already has kilometer scale arm cavity. You just repeat it somehow. But it's very expensive. It's very expensive to build such an extremely long cavity. So what people currently are doing is they're building a compact cavity with ultra high finance. But if a cavity has ultra high finance, that means this cavity is very sensitive to the optical loss. So this is a big problem. And currently, no group in the world can really make this squeeze light rotate in the satisfactory way. But this is very urgent. It's very urgent because this is the frequency dependent squeezing injection is the next step of upgrading the advanced LIGO. So it's really a in time problem. So then, what we try to study is could we use a simpler way to squeeze the noise in the broadband way? So we find an alternative proposal which may be very promising. So here, this proposal contains two main points. The first point is. The squeezing is not the traditional squeezing that we have before. We have a conditional squeezing. And this conditional squeezing is generated by manipulating the entanglement pair. So that's the first point. And the second point is, with this conditional squeezing, we can use the arm cavity as a filter cavity directly. Because arm cavity is so long, and the loss is also low, because people already built it and detect the gravitational wave. So the arm cavity can be if the arm cavity can be directly used as a filter cavity, that would be very good. So this our new proposal combines these two main points. So first, let me introduce what is the conditional squeezing. So in order to understand this conditional squeezing, we have to go back to the traditional squeezing. Why we have squeezing? Why we have squeezing? Right. So the squeezing is generated through a nonlinear crystal. Nonlinear crystal. So it's the squeezing. You can view the squeezing as somehow like entanglement. Entanglement. So if I have two fields, A omega with frequency omega and the other frequency minus omega, these two frequencies are distributed symmetrically with half of a pumping field. So you can treat them as sideband of the half pumping field, half pumping field frequency. So these two fields, you can treat them as two harmonic oscillators. And these two fields interact with the pumping field, which is a classical field, very strong, inside a nonlinear crystal. So this is mediated by the nonlinearity of this crystal and the pumping field. These two fields have interaction with each other. So we know that if two harmonic oscillators have interacting with each other, then they are entangled. The final state is the entangled state. So what comes out here, the A minus omega and A omega, not in, is an entangled state. So this entanglement will provide you the squeezing, will provide you the squeezing. So this one, entangled. For gravitational wave detector, it's very tricky because this omega is audio band frequency. So actually what we want is these two audio band frequency sideband get entangled. That's very difficult, but people have already built such a squeezer and reached the squeeze degree, which is about 10 dB. 10 dB can increase the sensitivity about amplitude sensitivity about three, factor of three. But here we don't want to use that audio band entanglement. We want to use the megahertz entanglement. This is also a good thing, but I have to talk to experimental people. I haven't done that, whether this is experimentally easy or not. But just to build a megahertz band squeezer is much easier than build an audio band squeezer. So now we have conditional squeezing, and we want to have megahertz band squeezer. So the entanglement pair, this one, and this one, these entanglement pairs are no longer separated by the audio band frequency, but it's megahertz frequency. But this separated megahertz frequency sideband will also have neighboring fields here. This neighboring fields has audio band frequency detuning with respect to the original megahertz band frequency. So this guy, and they also have neighboring fields. And these two fields are entangled, these two fields are entangled. But these two fields are not entangled. And what we want to do is we want to swap the entanglement of these fields, these megahertz separated fields, to these audio hertz separated fields. We want to swap this entanglement. Because we know that entanglement means squeezing. Therefore, if we swap the entanglement, we also swap the squeezing. So how we do that? The method we do that is through conditioning. So the idea is the following. So because these two fields are entangled with these two fields, so if I measure some combination, D1 is some combination of D minus omega and D omega. D2 is some combination of another combination of these two guys. So if I measure some combination of this D fields, because these D fields are entangled with C fields, so I actually obtain some information about these C fields because they are entangled, they're correlated. If I measure one, I get information about the other. So if I get the information about this guy, then the uncertainty of this guy will decrease, right? Because initially it's widely fluctuating, but now we know how it fluctuates through, at least we get part of the information about how it fluctuates through mirroring its entanglement counterpart. Therefore, finally we can partially predict how it fluctuates. Then the real fluctuating actually decreases. So that's the conditioning process. The key point is measuring this guy, D12, can obtain the information about C12, here. And the interesting thing here is we can make these fields, these fields close to the frequency of the LIGO laser, But this one is largely detuned from the LIGO laser. So these fields, these sideband fields, will finally carry the gravitational wave signal. So these are the fields that we care about in gravitational wave detection. And these fields are their entanglement counterpart. So if we measure this, we can actually decrease the fluctuating of the fields that we care about in the gravitational wave detection. That's the principle of the conditional squeezing. So if I measure some combination, specific combination of D1 and D2, or something like this, then I can predict the behavior of the corresponding entanglement counterpart of the C field, which is here. If I can predict this quadrature, then the uncertainty of this quadrature decreases. Therefore, the originally mixed state becomes a squeeze state here. And the point is that if I can make a frequency dependent measurement of this either field, of this D field, what I mean frequency dependent is at some frequency I measure some quadrature here. At some other frequency I measure another quadrature, which is shown here. So this is this frequency one, I measure one combination. Frequency two, I measure the other combinations, three and four. Then I can squeeze the entanglement counterpart of all these quadratures. So this guy is entangled with this quadrature. This quadrature is entangled with this quadrature. This with this, this with this. So if I measure this, I can squeeze this quadrature, this quadrature, this quadrature, and this quadrature. And then I can create a frequency-dependent rotation of the conditional squeezing field. So the key point is that the frequency-dependent measurement of the D quadrature here can predict the behavior of the corresponding C field, reach a frequency-dependent conditional squeezing of the C quadrature. Yeah, so then comes to the most important point. How we configure this system. So this is almost just the advanced LIGO configuration. We have power recycling mirror in order to enhance the intracavity field here. We have signal recycling mirror, which is used to tune the bandwidth of the Hall detector. So currently LIGO is working in the broadband regime, so that the signal recycling mirror and the input test mass mirror, they are impedancely matched, so that the total transmissivity of the ITM and SRM are much larger, transmissivity is much larger than the ITM itself. So you have a larger transmissivity, so you have a relatively wider detection band. So this is just advanced LIGO. We don't need to do any change. So what we change is, initially we're going to put an audio band squeezer here. The OPA is an audio band squeezer. Now we change it to be a megaband squeezer. And this megaband squeezer can generate the entanglement pair separated by megahertz frequency, the blue one and the red one. The red one has a frequency which is equal, center frequency, which is equal to the laser frequency here. So this field, when it's reflected back to C, to this photo detector, will carry the radiation, will carry the short noise, radiation pressure noise, and also carry the gravitational wave signal. So this is a field that we care about. That's why we call it signal field, signal. And the eiderer, after it's circulating inside this cavity, will go to D, another photo detector. Here is the mode cleaner, which separates these two frequency widely separated branches. So in this case, I do measurement on outgoing D, and I can predict the information predict some fluctuating behavior of the C, get some information about C. Then I can decrease the fluctuating of C using this correlation. So this is how we do this conditioning process in the real detector, in the real detector. So we don't need to do any change, right? Or almost we don't need to do any change. We need to add another photo detector here, which actually is more complicated. It's a homodyne detector. We have a homodyne detector here. We have two homodyne detectors. We change the audio band squeezer to be a megahertz band squeezer. Yeah. So it, and we had a mode cleaner here to separate them. That's the thing. But if we look into a little bit more detail, actually we will see that we also need to change the arm length a little bit. But the arm length change is not difficult in principle. So let's see. So as we just say that we have two different field branch. One is signal, the other is either. Signal go into the detector because the signal frequency is close to the carrier frequency of the laser circulating inside the cavity. So they can beat with this main carrier field, create a radiation pressure noise. So this field when it comes back to have radiation pressure noise and also short noise and gravitational wave. So the eiderer, because it has a large detuning, megahertz, so when an eiderer field beat with this main carrier field, they will create a radiation pressure force which is oscillating at megahertz frequency. So a megahertz frequency driving of the test mass will not change the dynamics because the test mass does not respond effectively at the high frequency, right? Therefore, the eiderer field only sees such an almost an empty cavity. But the eiderer field has a detuning. Therefore, the eiderer field will accumulate some phase inside this signal recycling mirror. Well, I should mention that this is effectively the end test mass. This is the input test mass, end test mass, input test mass, and this is the signal recycling mirror. So these are the effective cavity model of the interferometer. So here, the phase accumulated inside the signal recycling mirror can actually determine the total reflectivity of these two mirrors. These two mirrors can be viewed as one effective mirror with some transmissivity, with some modified transmissivity. So this modified transmissivity is actually determined by the phase, therefore determined by this large detuning here. So in general, we have signal and either. Signal fuels the gravitational wave signal, fuels the optomechanic interaction inside this cavity, and it is from the signal where we extract the gravitational wave signal. We extract the gravitational wave information. But the eiderer field, which is largely detuned, will just to see a rotation, just to see an empty cavity with a rotation. And I also want to mention that because our filter cavity, cavity should have a detuning. Therefore, we need to have some microscopic detuning of this arm cavity. And this microscopic detuning is doing in such a way that we move the end mirror by the integer number of the wavelengths. So of the wavelengths of the main carrier field. So if we do that, then we will not change the resonance structure for the signal mode. But we do change the phase of the eiderer mode, which create a detuning. So this is how the interferometer or the arm cavity behave like a filter cavity for the eiderer mode. And the eiderer field sees a rotation in the system. Yes. Right.
What change it forced to?
The change of this mirror position is the integer numbers of the wavelengths of the light.
In practice,
there are some because these guys are suspended.
Yeah.
And there are some reactive test mass. And there are also some electric circuit on site. You can push. You can change. But actually, I have to discuss with MIT people. I haven't. What is the bandwidth of their control? So, for example, according to my calculations, you need to change this mirror by something like a millimeter. I don't know if the change of the millimeter is within their bandwidth or not. If it's not within their bandwidth, for example, they can only control micrometer change.
Right, but I don't understand. So if I have a pendulum, so this mass is hanging from here. So now you can push it. Right? So you turn this on and then you push it this way.
Yes.
But then the moment if you take that out, okay, well, then you're going to make it oscillate.
Yes. But it's on. Yeah. And actually, this is partially how they do the locking, right? Because when they do the experiment, when they first construct these mirrors, this mirror cannot always resonate with.
Sure.
Yeah. So they have to control it.
Move it by a millimeter and then compare it with what you don't move it?
No, we want permanent millimeter. So we want a DC change of the millimeter.
Permanently forever? That's what I get confused about.
Yes.
If you just permanently move, why don't I just slightly change the frequency of the laser and then effectively I've done the same thing?
But the frequency of the laser is determined by the laser source. Yeah.
So they don't really want to change anything. I mean, the laser frequency and any other things has to be keep the same. That's consistent. I guess changing the arm length a little bit, like by integer number of the wavelengths, is probably the easiest thing.
Yeah.
But you already have these controls.
If you do it permanently.
Mm-hmm.
It's
just like originally it's four kilometers. Now it's 4 kilometers plus 1 millimeter, something like this. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But what did I gain by doing that? I mean, it just.
Oh, okay. I see. Maybe I didn't.
There's nothing special on the 4 kilometers in some sense.
So why I want to have this microscopic detuning? Because I want the idler field, which is detuned by the signal with megahertz sideband. With a megahertz detuning. So I want this to see a detuned filter cavity. So a tuned filter cavity will not rotate the squeeze light. I want the center frequency of the idler field is detuned with the resonance frequency of this structure.
Right.
Yeah. So I have two parameters to change, right? The first parameter is I can change this detuning. This detuning I can change because I can operate on the squeezer to change this detuning. And the second thing is this lens. So you will find that if you only have one parameters, if you only change the detuning, you can only change the bandwidth of this effective system. So maybe I explain in this way. So for characterizing a cavity, I have two things. First thing is the bandwidth. The other thing is the detuning. So I have two parameters. And I also want two parameters here to be changeable, which is tunable. So that I can have a cavity with my required bandwidth and also detuning. Bandwidth and detuning are independent quantities. So I also want two independent quantities here which I can tune to match this quantity, to match the number of the required detuning and the bandwidth. So one parameter here is the detuning between the idler and the signal is one parameter. But I need another parameter. So the parameter I choose here is the arm length of the cavity. I can change this. So other people suggest, like Haiji Miao suggests, that maybe I can keep the length fixed, but I change the transmissivity of the signal recycling mirror. This is also another three parameters I can change. But I don't know which one is experimentally more feasible or not. Yeah. So, the key point is the filter cavity need two quantities to be determined. And I need two free parameters here to change for the idler mode. Yeah, that's why I want to change the lens. Is that solving your question?
Yeah, I think I just, we can chat later. I guess what I'm trying to, so you're going to change something for the idler mode, fine, but when you do that, you change also
the
signal.
No, that's the key point. That's why I want the change of the length to be the integer number of the wavelengths. Because if I do that, I didn't change the signal path.
Okay. Okay.
Right? Because if I change the distance of this mirror by the integer number of the wavelengths, then then the carrier light will always resonate inside this cavity. So it doesn't matter. That's why we have to change it by integer number of wavelengths. So
So
maybe
I understand. I just said it.
Okay. Right. So this is a bit more details because the crystal will actually have a bandwidth. So it will not only generate this omega zero and omega zero plus delta entanglement pairs, but also generate other pairs. But you can always separate these pairs by doing precise homodyne detection. This is maybe too detailed, but yeah. Right. So this may be the most important thing here. So this is the theoretical sample sensitivity curves. So here I use the advanced LIGO parameters. So this magenta curve here is the advanced LIGO sensitivity, quantum sensitivity. These curves are the case where I apply this conditional squeezing technique. So for the ideal case corresponding to the situation that there is no loss in the system. So basically, the loss channel here we are considering is are two channels. The first channel is the cavity itself has some loss, and this loss is actually very small. It's only 100 ppm. 100 ppm means 100 times 10 to minus 6 fraction of power loss. Okay, so it's 10 to minus 4 loss power. So it's actually very small. And the other loss is coming from the readout, because here we have two photodetectors, C and D. And these photodetectors cannot be perfect. No photodetector is perfect. There's always some noise associated with this detection process. So this is another noise source. And we can know that because we want to make the correlation build up the correlation between the idle and signal. If there's some additional noise coming into this channel, then of course it will affect the correlation because the noise injected from here and injected from here are independent. So when you do the correlation, it will degrade your correlation. Right. So here we consider several examples. So we fix for the ideal case, there's no cavity loss, and there's no readout loss. So in this case, we can have an improvement factor about 2.25. But if we consider this loss, the 100 ppm intracavity loss, and also we consider the readout loss. So if we have 1% readout loss, we're almost close to the original ideal case. So in this case, I have an improvement factor about 2.15. And if I have 5% and 10%, I have relatively less improvement factor. So this improvement factor means, if I have 2.25 improvement in amplitude, then I can expand my the sensitive volume by a factor of cube. This is maybe 9 or whatever, 10, yeah. Right, but experimentally, I think 1%, the photodetector with 1% loss is doable, it's feasible. So if this idea indeed works, then see, we save the problem of building a complicated, compact filter cavity. And also, it probably will also solve the complication of building an audio band squeezer. Well, audio band squeezer already made and can reach 10 dB the squeezing. But it's complicated. You need a lot of device to support that. But if we use our megahertz squeezer, maybe it's easier. So that's the theoretical design. And actually, in early July, I'll go to MIT to discuss with Matt Evans to see whether it is experimentally feasible or not. So actually, my supervisor, Yanbei Chen, has discussed with these two scientists in Italy. They don't see any fundamental loophole. That's why they think it's promising and they want to try it for updating the advanced LIGO. Then we need to, for doing this experiment, we need to do a full simulation of the experiment. That was still ongoing. So I want to mention that this method is not perfect. We have a main limitation. The main limitation is because we use the arm cavity as a filter cavity. Therefore, the arm cavity is only one cavity, only two cavities. But if you look at from the differential mode, from a dark port, it's effectively one cavity. So that means I only have one filter cavity, That case only works well for the broadband detector. Broadband detector including the advanced LIGO, LIGO Plus, and also LIGO Voyager and Cosmic Explorer, this future update. But if we have a narrowband detector, only one filter cavity is not sufficient. For a simple narrowband detector, tune the narrowband detector, and I probably need two filter cavities. That's initially proposed by Kimball and Thorne in their original paper, two filter cavities. But if I have another effect like optical spring, I try to get some improvement at the narrowband, very narrowband, some optical spring effect, then the sensitivity curve becomes more complicated. Then I may need more filter cavities to do that. So this is our method. At this moment of time, I haven't think about how to extend our method to more complicated system. So for our case, only broadband detector. Yeah. Right, so we'll summarize this talk. I have several points. So first, the megahertz squeezer produces entanglement pairs. And the arm cavity can filter one entanglement pair and create a frequency dependent quadrature. And I measure this field and then get information about the signal field and squeeze the signal field through conditional squeezing. And this is a possibly promising alternative approach to solve the broadband improvement of the quantum sensitivity in the future. Yes, that's it. I have some supplementary slides.
Do you have an idea of the time scale for making a decision what to go?
Because we only report this idea in Italy in 22nd of May. So they, you know, previously they think, oh, we have to build the filter cavity and the time scale is maybe 2020 to finish this advanced LIGO upgrade. But then when Yanbei report this in Italy, some of them, maybe, like Matt Evans, think maybe we need to suspend that building of the filter cavity, try this first. So if it works, then maybe we can reach the same sensitivity improvement in 2018, something like this. Yeah. This is what Haixin told. I didn't join the conference because I just arrived at Caltech. So
you realize the advanced LIGO Plus sensitivity?
Yes. Yeah. So I have some supplementary slides to show you that. So this is the proposed advanced LIGO. This is advanced LIGO sensitivity curve, and this is advanced LIGO plus sensitivity curve, and this is the LIGO Voyager. This is the Cosmic Explorer. You can see all of them are broadband detection. Yeah.
So this is the sensitivity curves
quantum sensor. No, this is not. This is their original one. Their original one. Yeah. So my idea can reach the same thing, almost reach the same thing. Yeah. For all of them, this can be used for all of them because all of them are broadband detector. Yeah.
No, it can be used, but what I'm saying, when I'm trying to ask, if you compare, this is what the question that Juan was asking. They have A-LIGO plus plan.
A-LIGO plus. Plus.
Plan.
Yeah.
And then you use your method, would you think that you then you would get it closer to A plus?
Oh yes. That's what I mean. Yeah. For the what I want to say is for the advanced LIGO now is concentrated on 10 dB squeezing. But in Germany, they recently built a squeezer at megahertz, not audio band. They can reach 15 megahertz squeezing. So if we use that in our idea, that'd be much better. Yeah.
But of course, you need to reduce other classes of noise as well.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah.
Any other questions?
So has anyone experimentally demonstrated this?
Conditional squeezing, yeah. Right? Roman Schnabel is going to do that. He is going to do that, but haven't get any results.
But squeezing has been demonstrated long ago.
But the conditional squeezing, I have seen people doing atom system. Conditional atom squeezing. They squeeze some atomic quadrature using Bose-Einstein coils, something.
But not that for light.
Not for light. But how to say? It's hard to say because there are people doing the test of Bell inequality and generate the EPR pairs. These people actually, or do quantum steering, these people actually indirectly already show the conditional squeezing for the light. You can say that, but they didn't explicitly point it out, and they do not have, they haven't applied it in the quantum metrology. Yeah.